You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Peer Pleasure with Dewey Halpus on Adobe Radio and Jabberjaw Media. My name is Dewey, your host with the most, bringing you more great content week after week. This week, we have a good friend of mine, a fellow Jabberjaw Media host and founder, guitar player for Emery, has been for a really long time. It's pretty much the one band he's done besides Matt and Toby. You all know who I'm talking about, I'm sure. Mr. Matt Carter is my guest today and this week. It was so nice to get to catch up with Matt. He played Portland with Emery a few weeks back, and we actually recorded this in the front seat of my Expedition out front of the venue, kind of on the fly. We had an idea that, hey, we should maybe record an episode tonight. Didn't know if it was going to happen, and then ended up having time before the set. So it's very impromptu and just a conversation between two buddies. We've known each other going on 15 years, maybe longer. We did one of our last tours with Emery as Anatomy of a Ghost, and it was kind of a weird time where Anatomy was going towards breaking up and Emery was going towards exploding. So we were actually headlining over Emery, and by the end of the tour, we had switched spots. We basically said, you guys need to headline these shows as far as, or at least over us. I believe it was with a band called The Beautiful Mistake and a band called The AKAs. A lot of you may have been on that tour or been to that tour back in 2004, I believe it was. It was a fun tour. Ironically, the one we broke up on was one of the funnest tours we've ever done. You know, the bands were great and the shows were great. We just had a good time. It was a good lineup. So Matt and I have known each other a long time. Matt's the one who brought me onto Jabberjaw as a show and basically kind of my mentor in the beginning for podcasting. And I mean, he's basically made a career of doing things his own way and being his own man, which is fascinating. We talk about it a lot on the episode, so I won't bore you with that because you're going to hear it again. But let's get some business out of the way, and then we'll get into the episode, guys. So we are on peerpleasurepodcast.com. We are on Instagram. We are on Twitter, Facebook, everywhere podcasts are available. I know I say it week after week. Apple Podcasts, I mean, you can find us anywhere. So definitely tell a friend, rate and subscribe. We love seeing those reviews come in. We love seeing the subscriptions come in. We also love seeing all the emails and guest suggestions and everything else. So keep those coming. It means a lot. The last episode we did with Daryl Palumbo was one of the biggest episodes we've ever done, and that felt really good. Also to get his story out there, which he hasn't done before. So Keep on spreading the word about the show, and we love it. So rockabilia.com, over 500,000 items officially licensed from the bands. Check out rockabilia.com. They've got everything. Every band that's ever been on this show is on Rockabilia, as far as t-shirts, beanies, scarves, coats, everything. They've got it all. They've got mugs. They've got flags. It's insane. So PC Jabberjaw is the code for 15% off your order. So definitely head over and check out rockabilia.com. And I'm really stoked for you guys to hear this episode. We had a lot of fun doing it. So without further ado, here's my conversation with my good friend, Matt Carter from Emery.
That's great. No, it's fine. Yeah. If the gains are fine and you said it right, you're done. Because, when I first started podcasting, I would, of course, I'm an audio engineer from background. So yeah. I would do Pro Tools and I would do this and I would mix it and I would edit. And I would try to take out breaths and, we spent so many hours but to me, that was the part of how I learned. Like, all I was doing was I'd go back and listen to 60 minutes of audio. And I'd spend 2 or 3 hours on an hour of audio.
Yeah, yeah.
And analyzing that is it's horrifically not fun.
Yeah.
But it's how I became to really analyze speech and the way people talk and what works and what doesn't. You know? Like, that's just my process. It's always been super slow. I did the same thing with music when I learned. I was like, think about every note and how it relates to every other note and just break it down to the tiniest level. And it takes a long time to do that.
Yeah.
But when I come out the other side of it, I feel like I have a grip on how stuff works. So I've spent the last 5 years analyzing speech and speech patterns and what makes people laugh if they're trying to go along with what you're doing or not.
Yeah.
And I it drives me crazy now. I make it a point to never listen, never edit. I just I'm over it.
Yeah, I just plug and play, man. Like punk rock, I just go for it because, I mean, that's why I didn't demo when I started the podcast too. Like, I don't
just do it.
Yeah, I have to say, if I don't put these out now, they'll never come out.
It's kind of like improvising. I mean, it is improvising, but even like musically improvising. Like, I always wish that I was the kind of musician that could just speak through my instrument in real time, and improvise it. Yeah. Like, it seems like it would be the most satisfying thing. I wish I could just walk into a room with my guitar, or sit down with a trio, and speak through my instrument.
Yeah. You
know? Podcast is a little closer to that because I really can speak. I don't know what I guess we're rolling already.
Yeah, we're rolling,
I have
dude.
No
we're...
idea what we're talking about. And that's like so exciting.
I know.
I love it. I just love being in real time.
That's exactly it. Yeah. Dude. That's exactly it. And it's literally like, this is where, when I asked you this morning, and it's like, hey, or last night, I was like, hey, you want a podcast while you're here in town? Because last time we didn't get to, and whenever I go up to Seattle, we never meet up because I'm always so busy with I literally up there for like a quick trip or have the kids. Mm-hmm. So I was like, man, we should do this. And then we literally made it happen. Like, you guys go on in an hour and we're in my expedition out front of the venue chatting.
I love it.
So, I mean, the editing thing too, you're talking about, like, I can't worry myself with that stuff. Like, I have a guy in DC that will do stuff if I have a fucked up recording. Uh-huh. Like, oh man, I doubled myself here or whatever. That doesn't happen anymore, but he could fix it. You know what I mean? It's something where you with music, one thing I've noticed is you're very analytical, which, I mean, I've known you for so long, and just watching you back then, watching your process from being on stage to writing music. I mean, just watching you noodle around on guitar, the way you know how to go, where you want to go. Oh, you want this to have this feel? Okay.
Yeah,
and you
I
can
have a,
do that.
Yeah, yeah. I have a I have an internal vocabulary of this feeling is this thing, and I've analyzed it and named it in my own head and try to access it. It's not the same thing as pure expression.
Yeah.
It's just not. I mean, I admire people that Billie Holiday, just somebody, John Coltrane or something, they just express themselves.
Yeah,
I'm so
emote.
Envious of that. I study, learn, build a vocabulary, and then put it together in real time the best I can. But it's not, I don't really think of it as pure. But yeah, I have to know how something works or I can't do it. I just can't.
Yeah.
I have to fully understand something or I'm nothing.
Sure. Yeah. Well, Matt Carter, you'll be in the. I'll intro you and everything in the show. But that's why I like to just roll because it just kind of happens naturally. But you're one of the most fascinating guys I've ever known, and this is, and I say this with all truth, from the way you analyze things to the way you act to the way you create, to it seems like you can kind of just take something and whether you know how to do it or not, you can figure it out, and that's one thing with music, the how we know each other from touring. But with podcasting, how then watching you go into podcasting before I even really knew what it was. I just saw it on Facebook or something. You guys had a podcast. So I started checking it out. I was like, wow, they're really doing this.
Yeah.
You know, and you figured it out.
Yep.
And now you're a very successful podcaster. You've got other podcasts you're consulting for. You started a podcast network with Mike Mowry, which this show is on. Mm-hmm. Our shows are on. I mean, you just dive in. I mean, you have so much planning involved, but at the same time, you just kind of go by the seat of your pants, it seems like.
Yeah.
I mean, you go by the seat of your pants, and then you get a plan. Like, you act first,
maybe
think later,
there's
almost
a plan. Well, I kind of feel like I'm driven by interest and motivation. Well, really, a stimulation that drives me. Like, if something's stimulating, I will stay focused on it, either for 4 hours in a row or all day long or for 9 months in a row. If I'm obsessed with it, then I'll figure it out, not because I have natural talent, just I just is kind of wide-eyed, pay attention to what interests me and whatever is going to grip my attention for long enough. I think that's true about anybody, though. I don't think I just have to it's weird because I kind of maybe have what you'd call long attention spans. But whatever my long attention span fixes on, or anybody else, it'll figure out. Like when I was in school as a kid, people would say I'm hyper or ADD and I should take Ritalin and he's never going to, you know, that was the situation with me in school. And they would tell, for instance, they'd tell my mom that he can't focus, he doesn't listen, you know, all this stuff. And my mom got, when I was like 8 years old, my mom brought home Brief History of Time, Stephen Hawking movie. And it's pretty long and it's all theoretical physics with some narrative, whatever to it. And she said, I didn't move a muscle, like, laser beam focus on that because it was just very interesting.
Yeah.
And that's just all it is. If something's interesting, I can do it for 16 hours in a row if it's interesting to me. If it's not, I can't do it for 16 seconds in a row. But if you take that, and that might be extreme, but everybody can focus on something. And the question to me isn't, are you talented at this or do you really want to do this? The question is, if you're still doing this, whatever it is, in 5 years, well, you'll be great at it.
Yeah.
If there's something you're passionate about today and you still are in X amount of time from now, well, of course you're going to be good at it.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with natural talent, though.
Yeah.
It's just, and it's not if you put in the time because you're a grinder. It's not that.
Yeah.
It's just, if you can't help it and you pay attention, you'll get good at anything.
Yeah.
And that's, maybe that's not true of everybody, but that seems. I mean, that's just the way I look at stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the way you write music, too, is very, I mean, you understand what you want to get across versus, I think, from hearing you talk about it through podcasting and seeing you live and knowing you so long, it seems like you can just kind of get, I want a song to sound like this instead of I'm just playing guitar and there's a song.
I
want a song that's going to sound like this, so I'm going to sit down and make it.
Well, that seems, to me, that seems normal. I'm surprised to hear that's not everybody's process.
Yeah, see, that's what's, that's why you're fascinating. God damn it, because that's
well,
not the way
it
is.
To me, it's all vocabulary. It's like, I want it to be, feel like, let's see if I can be specific because I hate when people are vague in podcasting. So let's say I wanted a song that was like a certain amount of melancholy. I would cross-reference in my mind melancholy songs.
Yeah.
And I would think of what they had in common.
Yep.
And then I would not try to copy them, but, you know, try to put together a string of things that they had in common.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, there's a little bit of room for creativity, but it's mostly analytical. It's not that expressive. It's like, I like this certain song by Further Seems Forever that captured that thing that I was looking for.
Yeah.
But then I'll change the key and the time signature and the chord progression, but still keep the vibe of it. But I do that very analytically.
Yeah.
So it's only slightly creative, really.
Yeah, but with other people that create, a lot of them go off feeling,
right?
And everything else, they get that at the same time.
I'm not big on that.
See, that's what I'm saying. This ties it back in because the way, and you joke about on the podcast how Matt has no feelings, yeah, and doesn't feel like a kind of a sociopath, but that's also fascinating to me because you're in a creative industry, mm-hmm, where a lot of people really emote. Whereas you take it from an analytical standpoint, and uh-huh, you know the building blocks of it, which is why you'd be so good in the trades. But you have this mechanical way of thinking about it, which is interesting because you make this music that so many people take from it and make it a part of their own.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Where, but not by myself, I don't do that.
No,
I have to have an expressive partner.
Correct, but you design that music.
Yep.
That music is designed, which is interesting.
I engineer and arrange things,
yeah,
for other people to complete or fit. I mean, a lot of times I'm trying to create what I hear another person feeling. That's actually, yeah, really what I'm doing a lot of times. I'm saying Toby wants a song to feel heavy but awkward. Okay.
Yeah.
I've got a vocab. I know how to do that.
Yeah.
Is this it? Are you right? And I know if I can set up the pins right, an expressive person or somebody with a different vision or whatever can come and knock it dead or collaborate. And some stuff's my idea and some stuff's other people's idea.
Yeah.
But for sure, when I hear other people explaining what they're feeling, mm-hmm, I've got language and vocabulary for that. I know what they want.
Yeah.
Basically.
It's,
yeah,
insane to me. Like, yeah, just having that understanding and how they joke Matt has no feelings and all that stuff. But you've been through some crazy stuff in the last few years and, mm-hmm, you've become a father.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how... I wanted to ask you this because knowing how your mind works somewhat, like I understand how your mind works, I don't know how it works.
Uh-huh.
I kind of get it. When you became a father, what feelings overcame? Did feelings overcome you when you first laid eyes on, or is it more to love this child now, kind of like more the mechanics, like this comes next? What was that like for you?
None of that is accurate at all.
It's okay, like, okay.
So have you heard everybody else say when they have a kid, it's like their life changed, it was a special moment. Well, I just think that, to me, that doesn't resonate whatsoever. To me, but I love kids. I was excited to have kids. I've always wanted to have kids.
Yeah.
I feel like I care about things and love things, and I love my kid and was excited about it, but I cannot. I mean, I am overwhelmed with fascination about my children.
Uh-huh.
Music's interesting. Science is interesting. My own DNA being put together with my wife's output and then watching them learn is, I couldn't be more naturally engaged with that.
Yeah.
Is the way I feel about it. Like,
okay.
It's not hard to, I mean, yeah, of course you can say I love my child or whatever, but it's not, I mean, it's a real pure fascination for me. Like, of course it's amazing. It's like, yeah, the most fascinating situation ever to watch your offspring or the product of your DNA and your wife's learn and grow and do stuff. That is just never going to get old.
Like, yeah,
it's fascinating. It's easy for me to focus on, and I love it.
Okay.
Is the way I would explain how
that's
I feel
an
about
interesting take on it.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting take on it, and I knew it would be. but the other thing too with you is that's so fascinating to me is with your analytical mind and you use logic so much that you're a Christian,
mm-hmm,
and that's something where you've talked about it before. You said, "I don't know why I believe this shit, but I, mm-hmm, do."
Yep.
Do you remember when it clicked for you that you were a Christian? Do you remember?
Shit, Dewey.
I want to go into this because,
okay,
I do not understand, mm-hmm, how you're a Christian. And I don't mean this in a way.
Think I'm not one.
I don't mean this in
many people would suggest to you that I am not one.
I do not understand how your mind goes that direction with the amount of science and the, mm-hmm, amount of knowledge that you have. I mean, just literally science alone, how the world works.
Uh-huh.
It makes no sense to me.
I grew up in the rural South, obviously, yeah, but I've been debating evolution with people since I was 6 or 8 years, mm-hmm, old. I mean, me in favor of evolution, of course. But okay. Where I grew up, that just sounds like satanic talk.
Yeah.
So it's never been the natural. Well, shit. Now, this is a long story. I don't want it to be long-winded here. When I grew up in the rural South where religion was just, that's just all it is. It's Bible Belt, it's whatever. I assumed really early on that this Christianity stuff was not for me in the way that you're analyzing correctly now that this, and I thought that, well, I'm just going to figure out enough stuff and then I'll be able to drop this. But my parents take me and everybody else in my school goes here, but it's clearly nonsense. It was the point of view that I had on it, and I just thought once I understand like science and stuff when I'm like older, like a teenager, I'll be able to explain all this away. I just felt like it was a matter of getting enough knowledge to not have to do this goofy religion stuff. When I was about 16 years old, I had a spiritual experience or encounter with God or whatever. And like I said, a lot of people wouldn't necessarily say I'm a Christian in the way that they think that I should be. But a subjective, of course, spiritual experience, encounter with God, whatever. And I was like, no way. No. No. Surely not.
Yeah.
This is not happening right now. It was just kind of the way I was feeling, because I didn't really believe in it.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to church camp or whatever. And I was just astonished that this experience happened. And I was like, well, I have to figure out, you know?
I
was like, because there's something that just happened. And I don't know what it is. So I suppose it's this Bible stuff that I've discounted in my, because I didn't really grow. My parents we went to just like a mainline Presbyterian church. So it wasn't actually that fundamentalist. I didn't actually grow up. My parents are not that way. They were more liberal, really, for the rural South, at least. And so, but I was like, became Bible obsessed at the next moment. Well, my parents weren't. Like, if you ask my parents if they believe in, like, Revelation or Jesus coming back, they'd be like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
That's what my parents were like.
Yeah.
Which is not usual. But I was like, yeah, but I think there might really be something in here, because I had this experience, and I knew I was purely skeptical or fully skeptical before that experience happened.
Yeah.
And then that was enough to make me go, well, I better investigate this. So, you know, this is not a good real testimony overall, because when I get you up to 2018, the things I believe are not really in line with evangelical Christianity whatsoever anymore.
Yeah.
But I have spent the time between then and now trying to fucking get a grip on what is actually there or on the other side, and what amount of the Bible and that stuff is true, because it's clearly mostly nonsense stuff that people put on top of it. But, you know, I've spent the last 20 years thinking about, but what is true here? And I tried a lot of stuff and was part of some evangelical churches and very serious authoritarian churches. And I've tried everything.
Yeah.
And I'm out, and I've had a bunch of spiritual experiences through that process. Mm-hmm. And now I'm almost 40 years old, and I still can't shake that stuff that has happened to me. Mm-hmm. But I've also, at the same time, never found and have at this point abandoned the notion that there are other spiritual Christian leaders and denominations that actually know. Mm-hmm. No, there's not. Unfortunately, I've discovered, or from my point of view, there's not anybody that knows what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Except for, I'm not able to shake, there's something. And that's where I'm at today. Like, I'd still believe there's something, because it's not explainable and is spiritual. And to me, and maybe through my cultural reference or where I'm from, I really do feel like there's a real something about the God of the Bible in a general way, and Jesus. I think there's something there. I've not been able to eliminate it.
Okay.
But I have pretty much eliminated all forms of modern American Christianity from being really worth much. They're not, I don't think they really, it's not like if you find the right church and denomination, it's going to make sense, because it doesn't seem to.
Because there's a big difference between spirituality and religion.
Yep.
Where Mark Twain, I think, said, what did he say, when the religion began, when the first commandment, the first rule.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's good, well-intentioned people and not well-intentioned people, but there's not, like, the whole thing thrives on, well, there's somebody that knows more than you, and you just need to listen to them, and I don't share that opinion.
Like, okay.
I'm not saying I know everything, but
yeah,
you know, I
you know what you know.
I know there's something, and I've kind of abandoned the notion that it's able to be figured out exactly, or that somebody other human knows it is not very likely.
Okay.
But I'm not purely materialist. Okay. I mean, I operate in a scientific realm of, I go by degrees of certainty. We're very certain about gravity, mm-hmm. maybe not 100%, maybe 99.999. You know, we get that.
Yeah.
Evolution is clearly, obviously, the case, and the only thing that operates, quantum theory, does what it does. And even though we don't understand it, it makes predictions that we trust, mm-hmm. right? Yep. Well, spirituality and religion, there's none of that.
Yeah.
You can't. Don't even pretend like you can make predictions or prove anything there, because you cannot.
Yeah.
So I do not hold that in the same way that I hold science.
Okay.
However, I still don't think I'm not purely materialist.
Okay. And I've been curious about that for a long time, yeah. with you, because getting to know you better over the last few years, I mean, getting to know you again, mm-hmm. I guess, because we met 2004, 2003, you know, hung out on tour, did mm-hmm. that kind of stuff, kind of kept in touch here and there, and then getting into podcasting together, mm-hmm. kind of, well, not together, but me coming into podcasting later and hooking up with you and Jabberjaw, like, we were in contact more and doing, you know, conference calls and just listening to you speak and just remembering what I remember about how you operate. It just, mm-hmm. it didn't make sense to me in any way. And I wanted to ask you about it because of that, and I don't mean it in a discriminatory way or anything, but I was just curious, you know, how you got to that point. And
it's almost embarrassing to admit that I believe in spiritual stuff, to be honest, because I can't really defend it with anything empirical or explanatory or anything. So,
well, it makes sense to go one way or the other. I mean, neither way can be explained. So in a way that is 100%, you know.
It's like degrees of confidence, though. It's like scientific theories, people, you just have, it's great when, you know, when relativity supersedes Newtonian physics, that's great. Like, everybody's happy about that. It's not, and religion doesn't do that. And that's why you can, you know, it's just not, you know, religion says there was authoritarian revelation at some point in the past, and all we can do is try to understand it. Mm-hmm. And that's, I don't know about that. That's not good, because all it can do is get worse and less or misinterpreted, really. Like, there's not answers coming there. Whereas with, you know, most learning and stuff like rationality is actually more important to me than science, mm-hmm. I would say. But rationality means you continually update the evidence until you understand deeper and more. Mm-hmm. And religion is not, it's not like if we work harder at it, we're going to get more answers. It doesn't seem that that's the case. So,
yeah,
you know.
Well, you mean you're doing interesting things. You're with the Bad Christian Podcast, Break It Down Podcast. Mm-hmm. Like, you've been in the podcast world for a while now. The one thing I really find interesting about the Bad Christian Podcast, and me not being a Christian, listening to the show, is your take on things. Mm-hmm. Like, the guys are going off more like a, not sentimental, but more of like a, I don't know the word for it, with Toby and Joey are both very, they're more poetic and like sentimental with the way they view spirituality. It seems like their feelings. And then you come in with this just like, boom, put the curtain down. Here we go, guys. This is why that's happening, and this is why that's happening. That's always so interesting to me.
Well, you had to give it your best shot there. Like, I mean, it just seems unethical to not be. Oh, I mean, it's just skepticism, really, in which people confuse skepticism and cynicism a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I think to be cynical is just to be negative. But I don't find myself to be negative. I'm skeptical. I'm looking for what's the fault so that we can overcome it and then move forward and be certain as much as is possible and be honest about where it's not possible. And then you have to make your best guesses, and I go by the numbers on that as best I can.
And you don't hold on to things. Like, if something is either not of interest or you rule it out, it's gone and you're on to the next thing.
If,
like,
you can,
if I need this.
But you have to be very careful before you rule something out. You need to really have a high degree of certainty before you lock that off from your mind and move on.
Yeah.
And you need to be very, very thorough.
But you're very decisive because you're able to do that.
Well, once you have that, then you don't want to be wrong a minute longer than you have to, right?
Exactly.
I mean, it's like if I don't know who said this, but somebody said, or it's common in rational thinkers to say something along the lines of, anything, any idea or notion that can be destroyed by the truth should be, you know, like, In general, I find people, including me, to be way too defensive. That's a human quality.
Yeah.
So try to recognize when you're being defensive, because you're not getting at, when you're being defensive, truth is not your goal.
Exactly.
Like, that's obviously not what's going on. It's like defending yourself, which is a completely reasonable impulse. It's, yeah. it's a survival impulse.
Fight or flight, man.
Right. But once you go, wait a minute, I'm being defensive. What would it look like if I was trying to be right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, do that. If you have the ability to cool down, think, and do that, which I don't. I mean, there's a lot of times I don't. Then that clearly would be the rational thing to do, but it's not the easy thing to do.
Sure.
Yeah.
What's going on, guys? This is Dewey from Peer Pleasure, and I want to tell you about our newest sponsor, DistroKid. DistroKid distributes your music across all online platforms. They are an amazing company. I've enjoyed working with them the last few weeks, and they're going to be with us for a while, and I really, really appreciate that. I love working with great companies, and DistroKid is one of them. They have an awesome thing they're doing right now called Splits. Now, if you're working, as most people are, online, doing collaborations with people from all over the country, all over the world, as easy as that is with the internet, you want to get those people paid when you put that music online. And Splits can do that. You can add an unlimited amount of collaborators to any track. You can change the splits at any time. You can add or remove collaborators at any time. You can see previous splits. And all your collaborators are going to have to do is sign up for a DistroKid membership, a DistroKid account, so they can get paid. And as always, DistroKid never takes a cut. You and your collaborators get 100% of the earnings in total. A couple other awesome things that they do is they set up an official artist YouTube channel. You can use Spotify Canvas, synced lyrics, promo card to promote your release on social media, a mini video for your socials as well. There's just so many awesome things about using DistroKid. And like I said, I don't advertise things I don't use, haven't signed up for. I have signed up for this. It is a breeze, literally a breeze. And you can get going right away. So definitely check out DistroKid. And I want to give you 30% off your first year's DistroKid membership at any level. That is distrokid.com/VIP/PPP for Peer Pleasure Podcast. Once again, that is 30% off your first year's DistroKid membership at any level. distrokid.com/VIP/PPP. Go check out DistroKid right now. distrokid.com/VIP/PPP for 30% off.
This episode is made possible by PwC. It's getting hot out here. Moving the mercury can help move your business. PwC helps turn sustainability theory into real-world action. Reduce your carbon footprint while increasing transparency in net zero commitments. Start with reporting to identify your climate risks and reinvent your business. Create a more sustainable business and a stronger planet. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at thenewequation.com.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget. And we decide if they brought the One Hit Thunder or were nothing more than a one hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week. So pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.
Hey guys, this is Dewey from Peer Pleasure, and I wanted to tell you about Premium Pleasure, our premium subscription service that's available now. Peerpleasure.supportingcast.fm. is the website. There's three tiers, tier one, tier two, and tier three. Tier one is $5 a month. It gets you the ad-free experience. Tier two gets you access to the Peer Pleasure Passcast. It gets you access to the videos of the interviews. It gets you merch discounts. Tier three is $20 a month. That gets you all of that. It gets you the Passcast, gets you the video footage, discounts on merchandise, and monthly Zoom calls with myself and other guests. We're going to have all kinds of stuff in there for you. There's all kinds of stuff in there for you now. There is, I believe, 30 to 40 videos of these interviews. There is multiple episodes of the Passcast. The Passcast is a podcast that I'd started separately that is me and another podcaster or me and a guest discussing a deep dive into their favorite episode of Peer Pleasure. So there's a bunch of those on there. So-and-so and I would talk about the Chino Moreno episode. So-and-so and I would talk about the Yvette Young episodes. And we would do a deep dive and tell where they came from, how we got the guest, stories of that weren't discussed on the podcast or maybe weren't in there. It's just another glimpse behind the curtain. So that's the big deal with this premium service, is giving you a glimpse behind the curtain of how the podcast is made, gives you access to things I'm doing and things that we're doing with the show, gives you, you know, ad free stuff. It gives you just all kinds of things that we could throw in there to help make it a valuable part of your month. Because I put everything out there on this show. I put everything I have into this show. So being able to give you guys that little bit of extra is a big deal to me. And having your support is a big deal to me, because if we don't support our artists and creatives, we're not going to have any left. So I appreciate it. Peerpleasure.supportingcast.fm is the website. Go sign up today and get some of this premium pleasure. But that's something that, where you guys have identified, you know, a good amount of what you want to do with this podcast. You've gotten some pushback, I'm sure, from evangelicals on Christian podcast, you know, just speaking your mind about your feelings on church and everything else. And I find that view, the way you guys have presented that on the Bad Christian podcast, is fascinating to me, you know, as being outside of it. I mean, I'm fascinated by it because I'm just like, wow, that makes some sense. Mm-hmm. You know, you're basically challenging all these views that have been around forever. Yeah, and
that's not things religious people hate that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you're giving hope to people that are on board with it. You know what I mean? And that's something that's important to me.
Well, have you not ever been in a situation or a group or been around a thing where you're like, wait a second, I don't think this makes sense, but everybody else is just going along with it. I wonder if they feel the way I feel. Have you ever, I mean,
I was raised Mormon.
But it doesn't even have to be spiritual. It could be like a bunch of people that are all pretending like they like the restaurant that they chose.
Oh yeah,
you know,
corporate retail world, man.
Right, you can tell.
Oh my God,
you can just tell when it's like, oh, I think everybody's just going along here because nobody's willing to either say the truth, mm-hmm, or explore it or ask the harder questions.
Yep.
But that would, if you looked at it objectively, that's all you'd ever want for any group, like. That's what everybody needs to be doing, but it's not easy. But when you recognize it, you know, groups have to, I think of it this way, groups need to police themselves.
Yep.
It's just the way it has to be done. And people have to ask, you know, that's what we want for anything. It was what we would want for the Muslim religion, mm-hmm, for instance. Like, I don't need to tell them what to do.
Yeah.
But they need to get their shit together in some ways and tell each other what they think and ask the tough questions. And you know, everybody needs to be updating their points of view all the time.
Sure.
With everything. Yeah. Or we're all in some kind of danger at some point.
Exactly.
Whether it be the restaurant you go to or what happens with civilization.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to. It's hard, but you got to try to figure it out for real.
We were talking about something with civilization I want to touch on here in a minute, but at dinner tonight. Yeah. But one thing, when you brought that up about if I've been in that situation, working for Target in the corporate side, Target has two very basic business models. One is we're going to charge a little bit more because we do not want Walmart's clientele shopping here.
Mm-hmm.
We want to appeal to soccer moms and blah, 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 blah. The other one is they hire straight out of college because they're going to pay these people, you know, $50,000 a year, straight out of college to be an assistant manager, because mm-hmm, we know when we put down a directive, they're not going to question it. The people that have been managers for 50 years and want to come in and work here, they'll say no to this. They will not just try something every time we throw it down. And it's worked time and time again. They literally bring them in out of college and they say, this is the way we're going to do it. So like, guys, we're going to do it this way, because they don't understand.
Wait, is that good or bad that they don't?
It's good for Target because they can put down a directive and implement it and try it out.
Uh-huh.
Because the people that work there that aren't management see the flaws in the plan, like this isn't going to work because of this, and there's pushback. If they have a whole fleet of management out there that will just say yes because, hey, they're paying us good money and it sounds like a good idea, it literally flushes it right down and they can try it out and pull it back if they want. They don't have that pushback. You know what I'm saying? Where, like, my dad was a retail manager for 20-some years. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't even interview him.
Yeah, they don't
because
want that.
Because he doesn't have a college degree.
But is it functional and works for Target, though?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And you see
the people
there?
They hire aren't doing. Are you saying they're conformist sheep that do whatever the people say, or it's good that they're not jaded from. I'm lost on that.
They are basically just a voice box. They're just like, Target says this. That's my job. I'm going to go out and do this.
But that allows Target to try new things.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that does ultimately work. Yeah.
Yes.
Even though those managers themselves are more like pawns.
By the time they start to come around and realize what's going on, they're already either a store manager and paid a lot more, or they're on to somewhere else, working for Amazon, working for Google.
Yeah.
I mean, 90% of the people there are gone within 3 years.
Yeah.
And even in a managerial position. But that's kind of the same thing. We would go out on these trips and these meetings, and literally it was the same thing you're saying, where it's just herd mentality. Like, no one wanted to say anything against anything unless mm-hmm. it was the district manager.
I see.
Well, I feel this way. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, everyone's just trying to be on brand and everything else.
That's horrifying. A disturbing quality about humans. I say this, I've said this a decent amount of times, but that scene in the Avengers movie, the first one where Loki starts telling all the people how people are sheep mm-hmm. and they are meant to be ruled and all that, like, that's just so dead on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so dead on. Like, I love that scene in that movie. I just feel like that is so accurate and true, and he's supposed to be being the bad guy, but he's just kind of telling like it actually really is. I mean, I think that really resonates kind of thing. It's just, and I don't know if we cultivate, I mean, it's obviously just that way, and I think we make it worse with our education system and the, you know, people coming out of college what do those people get, a business degree, a marketing degree? They don't, I mean, that the thing about college almost is like, it's not so much that you learned a lot, is that you've demonstrated that you're willing to play games to get to X, Y, and Z place, and that's good for people that want to hire you.
It teaches you how to research and how to find answers on your own.
It teaches you how to comply, is what I'm saying. It teaches you how to do what somebody else is going to want you to do to get what you want, and I don't really like that. You know, that's not, that to me feels not good.
Sure.
But, you know, our systems kind of really are built around thriving on, you know, conformity, for lack of a better word.
Get it done, and you get it done cheap. Like, it's crazy. But we were talking
people
about,
like to conform, though. They just want to be told what to do. They like that, you know, kind of thing. It's messy being out in the world that I'm in.
Yeah.
It's scary, but it's stimulating. I don't know. I mean,
well, you're making your own way, too. Yeah. You're doing everything yourself. You don't work for anybody, really. Yeah. I mean, you you haven't. That's what's cool is, you know, Emery, in the heyday where everything was really, like, people were still buying records and, you know, you could make money from music in conventional ways as it was. And then to now where everything's changed, you guys have adapted and continued. And then with the podcast stuff and all these things you're doing, you've been working for yourself. I mean, I can only imagine how tired you are at the end of the day.
Well, you're saying that because all I can hear when you're saying that is, I guess you're right, but that means I'm going to have to do it again. It's like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, this, whatever I'm doing now, it's going to be for a relatively short period. I'm not going to retire podcasting on the Bad Christian Podcast with income. That's certainly not going to happen. All that means is I'm going to have to pick up some other... I mean, I have to start from scratch again soon on something else. You know what
and
I mean? That's exhausting sounding.
But you will.
I don't
That's
know
the
if
thing.
I will.
You will.
Maybe I'll go straight.
I'm not going to see you. I'm not going to see you on the streets.
I'm going
to
go in the trades. I'm going to go in the trades next.
Dude, I'll get you in. I'll get you in. I'm talking to Toby about it.
Yeah.
He always says, hey, if I was just a plumber, and I was like, dude, here's what plumbers make, Toby. And he's like, well, are you serious? It's like, yeah, with pension and benefits. He's like,
so
no.
Crazy.
It's like, dude, you got to stop saying, hey, if I was just a plumber.
Well, I see
just a plumber,
I passed a sign yesterday that said, you know, licensed electrician starting at $50 an hour in Seattle. Just, you know, the signs are up. Like, man, could I do that? Like, you know, I do electrical work at my house now.
Yeah.
I'm not licensed, of course, and nor do I get inspected, but I know how to do some of the basic work. So that's my fallback, is just something in the trades. Because I like mechanical stuff. Like you said at the beginning, to me, everything's mechanical. That is the frame that I'm looking at it from.
Sure.
So understanding, like when I do woodwork and electrical as a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
That is the way I do those. I like to build and design mechanical things just as a hobby.
Yeah.
You know? And it's helpful around the house, of course, and stuff. But,
well, I mean, you support a family on your creative output. I mean, it's impressive.
Well, I appreciate
it really
that.
Is. I mean, and I say that just because I've watched you do it for 20 years.
Well, I appreciate it.
You know, you're still sitting here in my car right now, completely self-employed.
Yeah, but you're giving me anxiety about what
I don't
are,
mean
that
to.
Doesn't. I mean, what's next? I mean, what are we gonna? Surely we're not gonna be doing this in the future. I don't know,
dude. Who knows? It's the Wild West. Dan Carlin said it, dude. It's the Wild West.
Well, you know, there's something to that thing where, you know, I've been thinking about where people, when they get older, they want to, like, mentor people or something. And I've always thought, I don't love the way that is, because it sounds like, well, if you know how to do this stuff and you're going to teach people, why aren't you just still doing it? And so I wonder, would it be soft to go into, like, consulting or teaching or coaching or managing other talent, or will I actually be able to be some type of artist and talent when I'm 40?
You're 40
you know,
young,
next
man.
Year. And I mean, will I still be able to be something that would be considered an artist when I'm 50? Maybe.
Dude.
But I haven't thought that far. I don't have a plan.
You don't need to. I think if you thought that far, you'd be terrified.
Okay. Well, then I'll
because
I'll
right
just
now
keep on then.
You don't have that plan. Yeah. So like you would be terrified. Like saying that what's next brings you anxiety. Keep doing what you're doing because you're. I mean, it's working.
Well, I'll take that.
You're making it working. You know, yeah. you're doing it, and that's something that's just been overwhelmingly, you know, inspirational on my end. Even coming into podcasting and shit like that, like. Well, Matt's doing it. I should give it a shot. And then here we are. And now and it's taken this long to get you on the show, but I'm so glad it did because we've got so much more to talk about.
Just
being around that much longer, you know what I mean? But tonight at dinner, we were talking or what were you going to say?
I was just going to ask you how did you prepare for this particular? I'm interested in your prep
for this episode?
Yeah, yeah.
I have been developing a narrative in my mind since I started the show about having you on. And what we would talk about. And it's all these little things that I've kept in the back of my mind, like religion and the way you process things, how you write music, you know, how you're actually literally like coordinating music versus writing music. You know what I mean? Where the way your mind works and, you know, listening to your episodes of Break It Down, Bad Christian Podcast, you know, things like that. That's how I prepared. Like this one, I knew I would never have notes for it.
Yeah.
Because notes would be stupid because it's going to change all the time. But then even tonight, just at dinner, we were talking about this app that Toby had on his phone.
Yeah.
And you're instantly go into what could happen with this app where it's, you know, making your eyes move and mouths move and then talking about how we're basically going to be in a beta test the rest of our life.
We are the beta test.
I mean, these kind of things. So it would just constantly change. Like I'd have a list of 10 things in my head that would then 3 would get pushed out and 3 more would come in.
Yeah.
So,
well, I've not had that thought until I saw that app.
That's what was cool about it because we were both sitting at the table and it just happened. And I was like, dude, we need to talk about this because you've talked about before how our kids, you know, I have 2 littles as you do as well. And then I have 1 going into college. So she's already, you know, been through it, blah, blah, blah. The littles may never drive a car.
I don't think they will.
And you flat out said that. And I thought about it for a second. I was like, that's ridiculous. And I was like, wait a minute.
Nah, I don't think
how fast things are progressing. Like it's getting like exponentially faster that Georgia probably won't drive a car.
Probably not.
Won't drive a car.
I mean somebody her age will, but if you live in a city like Seattle in 10, 15 years, it's not kids already don't get drivers they don't seem to care about driver's license like I did.
Yeah.
And I just think it's very low likelihood they'll drive.
Well and with this preparation question too, like the way I would do it with a regular podcast of a guest I didn't know, or someone maybe I did know, I'd write down 2 pages of notes, do all this research or whatever, just for due diligence, and I would usually just set them on the dash and not use them. But with you, I mean, just working with you with podcasting, how you're like, you know, I just need 3 things to talk about. I can talk for an hour and a half. I thought about that, and I was like, you know, he's right. Like, if you have 3 main talking points, you could literally go on for however long.
Yeah.
And that completely changed the way I started doing the show because I would just be like, I'd prep stuff and then I'd have like in bold 3 things that I wanted to get to. And it changed everything.
Well, that's good to hear. I think that is a lazy method. I've been trying to think about what would it look like if I actually spent, you know, 4 hours preparing for 1 hour interview. Of diligent attentional where I don't really ever do that. I'm trying to build it on being present and like that. That's kind of what I've been trying to do. But now that I think I've got that kind of under control, like me and Sarah do this 2 hours, I won't leave you hanging. It's not going to be dead air or nothing.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be hard. But what if I really I'm kind of thinking through that. Like what if I actually pretended like I really cared and was really going to do it. Like I do a lot of stuff and think, well, but I didn't even hardly prepare. So of course it was good, but that's lazy. What would it be like if I dedicated something to a craft or something even more? And I think there's a lot more that could be done, but let's talk about the app though.
Well, real quick, when you say that, when you go and have a conversation with somebody, like you run into someone in the venue there, you end up talking to for 20 minutes. You didn't prep for that.
Of course not.
It's natural.
You do it all
It's
day.
Humans conversing.
Right.
We're reading each other right now.
Right.
Body language, everything.
Yeah.
There's so much shit going
That's
on right
exactly
now.
That's exactly right.
Which is why I love in person, by the way, versus phone, because you don't get that body language. You know what I mean? Anyway, but that's why I don't think it's lazy. I think it's real.
Yeah.
it's lazy if you think about it in a business sense, like a job interview.
Yeah.
But not as a conversation. You know, no, that's what we're bringing to people.
That's
is
right. That's
fly
true.
On the wall. There's someone sitting in the back seat there listening to us, hiding out, you know. But this app.
Yes.
This app.
I wanted to tell people what it was, and it's actually new in my mind to think about it that way. But you know how people do the apps where you put bunny ears on and you can smile and it smiles
Snapchat.
Or whatever. Just the little stuff like that. Obviously, you know, they've got that. But Toby just had this app where he took a still picture of me. And it's making my – it's really getting – I mean, of course, this is not surprising. We've been heading this way for a long time, but it's starting to get really good at how it can manipulate my face into making it do – make it facial expressions that are very believable that I never made. I didn't make those expressions, and I find that very disturbing.
Yeah.
And I'm what I would consider almost – in the category of transhumanist is really the way wherever we're going with technology, I accept the fact we're going.
Yeah.
And it may transcend humans and be better than that because humans are pretty flawed overall.
Yeah.
So I'm all in.
Yeah.
However, some of the stuff that's going to happen in the near future is just going to be very uncanny and terrifying. And this is, we're going to see some really nasty shit soon, I feel like. And this is the tip of the iceberg. Everybody else is going, isn't that funny that it makes your mouth move? It makes you look like you were saying something you didn't say. Or it's actually spitting out words now and saying no and making you make a negative face that it's analyzed mm-hmm. a billion pictures of to know how to make every nuanced thing generated in real time on a new face that it sees, and it's just going to blur the lines of reality so much. We're going to be in VR, we're going to be looking at apps, and you're not going to be able to tell what's real and not real. You're just not going to be able to tell.
Yeah.
And that's going to be not being able to know what's real is fundamentally disturbing. That's not a comfortable position for a human to be that disoriented about reality.
Yeah.
And we're just going right at it.
Exactly.
And everybody else thinks
full
it's funny.
Bore.
Yeah. And we're going to have to develop all the new manners and etiquette, and I don't think that's going to be able to, or not even that, just safety. And we're not going to be able to keep up. Somebody's going to send. And then, you know, he does it. He took a picture of Dave's newborn that is 2 months old and made it smile and say stuff, and it looks real, and that is I was just like, you didn't ask permission to do that to Dave's daughter is the way I felt when I saw it. Like, you're violating, to me you're violating something there, but here we go. I mean, it's not, I don't think outlaw it. I mean, we're gonna have to embrace it, plunge headlong into it and figure it out, but that's very disturbing.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's going to send your enemy very soon in middle school is going to send a porno of you and your classmates to your grandma.
Yeah, yeah. This is, I was laughing.
That's what's going to happen. I mean, it's not going to be hard for anybody to do that soon, and you'll be sorry that happened, of course. But here we go. That's all I'm saying.
It's crazy.
And we'll go past that, and I'm an optimist overall about humanity and civilization and technology. I am.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of nervous at this moment that you and I live the rest of our lives in a pretty deep, uncanny valley.
Yeah.
And eventually it'll get figured out after we're gone.
That was an interesting point, that the rest of our lives are going to be a beta test because the technology is going to be so infantile in what our kids are going to see that we're going to have like the messed up texting robots like you were talking about, where everything's just kind of jarring and not quite there yet.
Yeah.
Like, we're still like working the kinks out.
Well, you know, when they made the electrical grid, how many people just died because they didn't understand electricity?
Yeah.
But we're glad they did it. We had to get through that or whatever. But
sure.
This bridge we're about to cross is crazier than that.
Yeah.
And we're going to be the test subjects, of course. Oh, so,
dude, and that's something that's, it's terrifying. I try not to think about it, but I also need to think about it because I'm raising kids in it.
Yeah. Oh, and maybe the same as when the cars came out, how many people got hit by cars that had no idea what they were, just whatever. I mean, of course, that doesn't mean that. I'm all for it. It's inevitable. Let's go.
Yeah.
But get ready.
No seatbelts, the sharp knobs that people would hit.
And they would got killed all the time. And the Industrial Revolution happened, and it's just like, oh, shit. Like, we made a billion mistakes till we figured it out. But the stakes are higher here, and here we go.
Did you guys ever play Furnace Fest down at the Sloss Furnaces?
That's
all those
amazing
people that died in there? Oh, my God. That's a whole other podcast.
That's one of the coolest places ever.
Dude. Well, let's talk about a little bit here with – I want to throw this on there because this will come out in a few weeks, but – the new Emery record, you guys, as of right now, here at the Analog in Portland, you guys have finished drums, vocals on 8 songs,
yep.
And it'll be out later this year.
Yep, it'll be out in the fall.
Is anything changing on this record? Is it like a, I mean, the records have progressed, but is there new things you're trying on this record? I mean, you're not producing it.
I can tell you the pro. Yeah. Me not producing it is a big step. It's also, well, look, I don't mean the guy that is producing it is named Chris and he plays in the band. Now he was in the band. He's in the band Surrogate and he was in the band Number One Gun and he's just great. I'm so happy working with him that I have no problem turning over the engineering reins to him and tracking and all that. I'm more hands off the older I get.
Yeah.
That's the skill I've been really working on is not being a control freak, because the type of way I have, I want to think about every kick drum velocity and where the timing is of it and what, where it fits in the pattern and then what the, when does the bass sync with it and what's the, I just like that. Yeah. I like to babysit the tuning on each note of the vocals. I like it, but I can't do it. I'm not doing it. It's relatively counterproductive at this point. And so I try to grow the skill of being hands off and not a control freak, because that's not good. It doesn't work in our organizations and businesses to make things bottleneck with me, although it feels good from time to time to be in control.
Sure.
So I work hard to let go of that, but I turn it all over to Chris, not to diminish from him, but the point of where Emery's at now is that we're about 40 years old. We're better at playing our instruments than we ever have, just because we have the years of experience.
Yeah.
And I just want to make music that's more like what I would consider unproduced. I don't know if that's a good technical term for it, but I just want it to sound like what we sound like if we pick up instruments and play them.
Yeah.
So it's not hard rules. I'm not saying there's no editing or anything like that, but in every way possible that it can be feel alive, the recording things at a high production level is not attractive to me at all anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's personal or pendulum swinging or whatever, because I've certainly been very guilty of overproduction when I have my hands on it. I want to – there's no reason why we can't make it sound good with the sounds that just come out when we make them.
Yeah.
And so that answers a lot of questions. Like, is there going to be a drum machine or some electronic beat? No, there's not going to be. That's not allowed. It's just – the instruments that are in the room that we can play them and make them. If something needs to be cleaned up or edited, whatever, it's not a purist approach. It's just, it just, that the whole thing about creative stuff is you got to set parameters so that, you know, the more parameters you can set, then you actually have room to be creative here and there and there. You can't just say you can do anything. That's too broad.
Yeah.
So right now I'm selecting for what does Emery sound like when they get in a room and work songs out and play those songs. I would just want that. I like the way that that sounds, and I want to try to make the record I want the listener to have that experience that I have when we get something right in a room together, although we're not tracking it live or anything like that.
Yeah, have that jam room feel, though, that magic that's there.
And I think that can sound really good. It's not. Yeah. I don't want it to sound trashy or garagey or lo-fi. It's not that. It's just if that helps make the decisions, that's what I'm selecting for is that, you know, just authenticity in a way. Because I don't know. It's gotten too easy to make stuff sound perfect. It's not attractive to me to hear that anymore.
Yeah. So. And then you'll feel more comfortable when it comes out, being able to play the songs live and everything else. The fans will be stoked because it's going to sound like it does on the record. Yeah.
The other reason that happens is because I haven't spent 180 hours with each song. So they're actually nice for me to listen to. The other way, put everything I can into it, and by the time it's mixed, I'm fucking out. Like, I don't want to hear that anymore. Like, I enjoyed it the whole time.
Yeah.
I hear it mastered, and I jam out to it and think, you know what? That was pretty good. And then I don't listen again. It's over. But the last few batches, like, the last record was a little more this way, and we did something recently that Chris produced. It was we redid some old songs, and I let him totally take the reins and do it. And listening to those was so satisfying. It was more satisfying to listen to stuff that I worked. Matt and Toby record was the same way. I had somebody else produce it.
Yeah.
And it's more satisfying to have the final product if I don't spend 1,000 hours on it. If I spend 80 hours on it, then it sounds good to me because I haven't.
It's fresh still.
It's fresh. It stays fresh. Yeah. And so that's rewarding in itself too.
That makes complete sense.
Yeah.
And you guys, you're touring. The words escaping me, but the way you guys are touring now, your whole regimen of touring, doing like a week here, week there, doing it regionally, and doing it the way it works for you guys with kids and being, you know, husbands, fathers, like it's just this whole new way of touring. Like the Thrice guys are doing it too. Like we won't go out for longer than 3 weeks. Like, but it's it's sustainable, isn't it? It seems
Yeah.
You don't have to go out for 3 months anymore.
Right. It's totally sustainability is for sure. Well, the thing we've never managed is, you know, as far as you want to use terms like that, is scalability. We've not really figured out, but sustainability, we're working pretty good at that. Like, we make it where we can, you know, we have to just design it. I mean, that's what you're doing. You're living your life. You're trying to design your life. And if you're designing your life and your career, that's the whole point, is to make it sustainable and enjoyable. That's what you got to at least strive for.
Yeah.
And so you have to balance the things out. But, yeah, if we, you know, bands get in the groove where they push themselves, and whoever's the weakest person that had to finally go home or take a vacation, maybe they need to quit the band. Mm-hmm. That's not sustainable. That's why bands break up.
Exactly.
So we got 14 kids.
Yeah.
So
it's crazy.
We have a blackout calendar, and it's just so depressing. Like, it is so depressing. Anybody can put on it dates they're not available, and it is horrifically full with kids' birthdays. It is horrible. Like, we can go out in November. Oh, no, you can't.
Yeah.
Never. Because there's 8 kids with birthdays in November, so you're not ever going to do anything. It's terrible, but because the kid's birthday will fall on a Thursday, and the party's on a Saturday, so a single child can block out 4 or 5 days in a week every year.
It's
insanity. We got 14 kids, and it's just nonsense. Like, not to mention anniversaries and birthdays and holidays and back to school and whatever. It's just great. Like, the next time we are going to tour in November, but we can't leave until after Halloween.
Yeah.
Of course you can't. So it starts November 2nd.
Yeah.
That's what we'll fly on the first. We'll go, we'll dress up, we'll take our kids out. And luckily, there's no birthdays for another 10 days after that. And that's the time we're going to have to tour.
Well, that's the cool thing, too, about getting people to show up to the shows is you ruled out a lot of shows, show nights where people won't come out.
Yeah. It's almost obvious. Like, it's almost like, well, you can see where we're going to tour because it's wherever the gaps are. We'll be out.
Dude. Oh, that's awesome. Well, Matt, dude, this has been awesome. Like, you got to get on stage soon too, and
yeah. Sorry, I can do it longer. But
no,
I'll come
it's
back.
Good. 49 minutes. Look at that, son.
I am a very big fan of this show and what you do. And I told you this before we started, but when podcasts have become less and less conversational, in my view, where they become more and more like talking points or agenda based medium, like, and I don't think that's good. But to me, this is really good. And what you do,
I appreciate that a lot, man.
Is just right on of what people should really be doing. I really like it. I think you have a real talent and skill, and it's no pun intended, it's a pleasure,
dude. Thank you, Matt. All right, man. Well, check out Emery on Tour, and the new record will be coming out later this year. And if you haven't, check out the Break It Down podcast with Matt Carter, where he delves into all kinds of crazy ideas, and then also breaks down Emery stuff, like it actually breaks down the songs with clips and everything. And then Bad Christian Podcast, all on the Jabberjaw Network
label
and,
podcast.
Label podcast. Yes, we didn't even talk about that. We could do a whole podcast on that. But the Legends and Stories of Tooth and Nail, which is an awesome idea to do for a label with that much heritage.
Yeah,
it's crazy. And yeah, the Zayo episodes are my favorite so far. And that was a two part.
We did two on Zayo. Oh, what? No, I don't think I didn't tell anybody this, but we actually have 4. I have 2 more leads on Zayo that are our episodes. I just didn't want to run 4 in a row, obviously. So we just sitting on the content for that band generates so many stories. But there's at least 1 or 2 more I want to tell about Zayo that I already have tape on that I'll just spacing out the release.
That's awesome. Okay, buddy. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, dude. Love
you,
man.
Love you too. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Mr. Matt Carter from Emery, from the Bad Christian Podcast, from the Break It Down Podcast, the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. I mean, he's all over the place. He's got his hands in everything. And like I said in the beginning, he's been his own man his whole life, and he's made a career out of it. He has a family and a house, and he's just doing everything right, and hopefully it keeps working for him. I really hope it does. And as we talked about in the episode, I mean, it can be a little scary, but at the same time, he gets up and does what he wants to do. And that's kind of the dream, I think, for a lot of people. So congrats to Matt for all he's done. Emery has a new record coming out soon. They had finished up tracking a lot of it by the time we did this episode, and even more by now if it's not done already. And there'll be a lot more information to come on that. So keep an eye out for that new record coming out. And, I mean, there's just all sorts of things. You can check out the Break It Down podcast every week. You can check out Bad Christian Podcast every week. Maybe Matt's just all over the place. So also Jabberjaw shows. So check out Jabberjaw Media. You'll find all that stuff. So I really appreciate you guys coming back week after week. I love doing this show, and we got a lot of big guests coming up. It's going to be a busy summer is all I can say. I mean, probably five interviews a week for the next little while. So we're going to be a little bit backlogged, but at the same time, it's all going to be quality stuff and super stoked to bring it to you. So look forward to that. Rate and subscribe so you don't miss anything. And as always, we'll see you on the radio.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.